So a couple of keys for me to the series, which kind of are influenced by what we were just talking about. I think defensively, I just think that the Bruins have to play, they have to play tough in general as a team, but they have to be really especially hard on Toronto's top players, Matthews, Nylander, Marner. They certainly don't love fighting through checks. So slowing them down, I think you have to play that style against them. But a big key for me, guys, is special teams. And they say that ideally, and I say ideally with quotations because the Bruins in 2011 had a pretty porous power play, but ideally you want to have a top 10 PK and PP. Well, the Bruins have the 13th best power play in the National Hockey League at season's end and 7th best penalty kill. So 7th on the PK, top 10, 13th on the power play, just outside top 10. Okay. You know, they're flirting with it, right? But certainly the power play needs improvement. And a big reason why they're 13th is because they've been struggling so far or so much the last quarter of the season. Toronto on the power play, they're 7th. Talent-wise, they should be higher than that. I don't know about you guys, but every time Toronto's on the power play with that talent, it's one of those times where you're just holding your breath. No matter who has the puck on their stick, Matthews, Marner, Nylander, Tavares, Riley, you know something can happen at any moment. Where Toronto falters is the penalty kill, their 22nd. So looking at a Bruins team that's struggled on the power play, Toronto seems like a good team to match up against in the first round, to have that new lease on life in the postseason. It's like a new season. But also Toronto, they have holes in their game defensively. And I talked about off the top how don't rely on history. But the fact of the matter is, Scott, your counter to that, or not counter, but just a point you made, is it does matter with the core players, right? These core players do have that experience against each other. And David Pastrnak, Brad Marchand, they feel good with the puck on their stick when they're playing Toronto. They just do. They're able to create offense against this team. Now, I think you have what's the guy's name? Benoit. What's his first name with Toronto?
Simone Benoit.
Simone Benoit, Joel Edmondson. Those are defensemen that present something that gives guys like Pastrnak trouble, length and physicality. So again, this Toronto team is different than what we've seen in the past. But that said, I think the Bruins, especially on the power play, they can feel confident with the puck on their stick to make things happen. And I just think that you can't have a Bruins Maple Leaf series with the high-end talent that both teams possess and not think special teams is going to have a big factor.
Yeah, for sure. And if you're the Bruins, you might need your power play to make up some offense, because if it's just a 5-on-5 series and everyone's special teams struggle, well, the Maple Leafs have been a better 5-on-5 offense this season. They are tied with the Avalanche in 5-on-5 scoring for the season, first in the NHL. Since the All-Star break, the Leafs are first in 5-on-5 scoring, first in overall scoring, all on their own. Number 2 in 5-on-5 goal differential since the All-Star break, behind only Edmonton. Bruins on the season are a really good 5-on-5 team. They're 4th overall in 5-on-5 goal differential. But since the All-Star break, it's been not as good. They're 15th. I think they're just plus 9 since the All-Star break at 5-on-5, I believe. So again, that's more like middle of the pack. So, you know, if it stays 5-on, this is where I feel like I was in the minority in actually preferring Tampa as a first round opponent, because Tampa has not been a good 5-on-5 team. And I would have felt like, listen, as long as you can keep it 5-on-5 for the most part and don't give Tampa's power play too many chances, I would have liked the Bruins' odds. Toronto is a tougher 5-on-5 matchup. So you're going to need your goaltending to step up big time. You're going to need Ilya Samsonov or whoever Toronto puts in net to not stand on his head, which, you know, I know we'll probably get to goaltending, but like that should be advantage Bruins. Should be. Of course, it should have been advantage Bruins last year in the playoffs, and it wasn't. But yeah, if you know, if you're breaking even 5-on-5 or even slightly losing that, then you're gonna have to make up ground on special teams. So absolutely, Bruins power play has to, you know, it doesn't have to be like 50% for the series, but you're going to have to score, you know, a couple big goals or two on the man advantage.
Yeah. And just looking back at the special teams matchup in the regular season, the Bruins did win the regular season matchup there because they had three power play goals. It was Pasternak, Geeky, and Zacha, and Mitch Marner had Toronto's one. So it was an advantage for Boston in the regular season. Now, obviously, working with Razor now, like I hear him in the back of my mind occasionally, like regular season stats don't matter. But you know, what else are we supposed to go off, right? So in the regular season, that's the Bruins did win that. And by the way, those were the all three of the Bruins' goals. Came in their last two games, power play goals, I should say, came in their last two games against Toronto, not the first two games. The first two games, neither team really got a lot of power plays and neither team got a power play goal in the first two meetings. But in the two games in March, the Bruins scored three power play goals through that.
And Bridget, I want to address something because on Sunday Skate, you asked Razor this question and you were kind of asking on behalf of listeners and fans and maybe a little bit for yourself as well, but you asked him pretty much like, can you learn anything? Can you take anything away from a season series against an opponent heading into the playoffs? And Razor was quick to kind of say, no, it's a new season. You can't throw it all away. And I agree, but I disagree at the same time. I agree in the sense where the results don't matter, right? Whoever won the regular season series, I don't believe that matters at all. So I agree with Razor on that standpoint. Like, it doesn't matter anymore. Throw it out the window. What I do think, and I'm not saying Razor didn't think of this, or I just think it may be something that he wasn't thinking of in the moment, but I do think you can learn something from a season series against a team based on like system play. Like you do look back on film and you know, how what's their neutral zone coverage? What's their forecheck? What's their penalty kill? What are they doing? How do they play when they're down? How do they play with a lead? You know, different special teams, obviously formats and setups. So are they disciplined, right? Do they take stupid penalties, whatever. So you can learn from those games, right? And study the team, which is I'm sure what both coaching staffs are doing right now. But as far as the results of those games, that doesn't matter. But I do think both teams can learn from how the other team plays, for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, it would be useless for all of us going through this exercise of doing our series previews if we couldn't glean anything at all from what happened in the regular season. And I think, well, I want to get to this now because this was a key thing in those most two recent meetings was goaltending and how well Swayman played. Which can kind of lead into our talk about goaltending and how the Bruins match up with Toronto in that category.
Yeah, well, it should be favorably, right? I mean, Ullmark and Swayman still two of conservatively the 10 best goalies in the NHL. So no matter who's in there, you expect good goaltending no matter how they approach it. And Toronto has the same goaltending question that they seemingly always have, like just change the names every couple of years. It's always the same. Last year in the playoffs, Ilya Samsonov. So Ilya Samsonov had a good season last year and then a good first round against Tampa and Toronto wins that series. Then he craps the bed against Florida, gets yanked. They turn to Joe Wall, who ended up being pretty solid in that series. But obviously Toronto still loses it anyways. Toronto comes into this year. Ilya Samsonov is supposed to be the number one. He has an .890 save percentage. That is bad. All the advanced analytics for goalies suggest that he has cost the Maple Leafs goals. He is in like goal save above expected. Ullmark and Swayman, two of the guys near the top of the league. Samsonov is a minus, meaning he has let in more goals than you would expect a league average goalie to let in like the same situation. That takes into account number of chances you face, quality of chances, takes all that into account. So he hasn't been good. At times it looked like Wall might run with their starting job. Martin Jones got some games for them at one point. Jones is out of
21 games.
Yeah, he seems to be out of the picture. He hasn't played in almost a month.
Yeah.
Joe Wall has struggled since the All-Star break. They've at least won games that Samsonov has started. I think he's like 14-5-1 in his last 20, but he still has a save percentage under 900 in those games. So they're not winning because of him. They're winning because their offense has been on fire and they've outscored their issues at the other end. It should be a big edge for the Bruins. Like, that could very easily be the deciding factor. You could see the Leafs getting the better chances, being better 5-on-5 team, but Bruins getting the saves, Samsonov stinking, you know, possibly even going to Wall at some point, and that being the difference.
Yeah, if you look at their last five games, Toronto lost three of their last five, and each of those, I should say, three of the last five games that Wall started, he gave up four or more. And when you look at Samsonov, he's got an above three goals against average. It's not good. But he's still getting more of the usage. In his second to last game of the regular season, he gave up six goals in a loss against New Jersey and then gave up five yesterday. So, not good. Or not yesterday. In his last start, he gave up five. So, not the best numbers for him. You never as a goalie want to have above three goals against average.
So I want to get your pulse, each of you, on the offense and how you – yeah, go ahead.
I will just mention one last thing on goaltending. The Leafs also currently have Matt Murray on a conditioning loan in the AHL. He hasn't played in over a year, had double hip surgery before the season, missed the entire regular season, but – just like, you know, we look at Forbert being down in the AHL playing games and say, well, I guess there's a chance he comes back. I guess there's a chance you could see Matt Murray. Like, I guess you can't rule that out. But his game had really fallen off in recent years anyway, so that wouldn't be anything that scares me, just something to put on people's radar.
That might be – the Bruins might want to see that.
Yeah.
If you're desperate enough to have to go there in this series, the Bruins probably already have it. They're a pretty decent advantage. Also, before we get off of goalies, do you take into account, like, or I should say, obviously you take it into account, but how much weight do you give to the fact that Swayman played so well against Toronto in the regular season? Is that enough, even though he hasn't played as well as Ullmark in the last month or since the All-Star break, which is even longer than that? How much does that matter?
I mean, if it really shouldn't, if you do what Scott's suggesting, which is they're both playing in the first two games, doesn't really matter, I suppose. But I don't know if you can do this because both goalies are going to want to say they want to play. But perhaps if their relationship is so strong and they're so confident in their ability as a tandem, maybe you can have some sort of conversation with goalie Bob and Jim Montgomery and both goaltenders and talk about it. Like, I don't see Ullmark saying, yeah, give Jeremy the net for game one, right? Like, they both want that.
No, it's going to be told to them, not discussed with them.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I know. I guess I just painted an unrealistic scenario.
That was like a happy, friendly scenario of let's just do what's best for.
Well, here's the thing though. I'm not really sure. I guess my answer is does it matter if you're gonna do what Scott is suggesting? Does it really matter? Like, let's pick the right guy to set the tone, but then we're gonna go to the next guy. So I don't know.
I guess it doesn't if you are genuinely going to rotate them through the first four games, which Montgomery has brought up on his own, put the four game timeline on it. And also post game yesterday, Ullmark was asked about, have you been approached about what's going to happen in the playoffs yet? He said, no, it, you know, hasn't been spoken about yet. As of the last game of the regular season, which is, you know, not shocking. That's
and Montgomery basically straight up told us that he's not going to tell us a starter ahead of time. Now, I'll be interested to see,
he's
like,
sick of us.
Saturday morning skate, do we get it? Or does he legitimately keep it close to the vest and we find out whoever hits the ice first for warmups Saturday around 7:30 p.m. Like that, you know, I feel like there's like, I feel like that's the most likely time where we find out. Like, I don't think they're going to tell us ahead of time.
Scott will be frantically tweeting from as soon as someone steps onto the ice, as soon as the goalie comes out of the tunnel, Scott will be right there tweeting out.
To answer your question, though, where it matters for me is I would say that the combination of Swayman's success against Toronto and a very good final start of the regular season in Washington just makes me feel better about Swayman and makes me okay using him early in the series, whether it's game one or game two. Because I will say, like, if Swayman had a rough final start, or if he didn't have that history against Toronto, I would be sitting here being like, do you just ride Allmark? Like, boy, Swayman really hasn't sold me on it.
Change your opinion completely.
Well, if Swayman struggled down the stretch and hadn't been good against Toronto, like, wouldn't you have to consider that? Like, why would you feel confident in Swayman going into the playoffs? So I'd say those two things, success against Toronto and a very good final start, just gives me more confidence in Swayman and makes me okay with using him in one or two, or beyond that if he plays well.
Yeah, I mean, just let it be known, I'm not the one asking the goalie questions, and I'm not the one continuing the conversation, so I'm sure I'll be the one that's pinned for always talking about the goalies, but I didn't create this monster.
Are you talking about the one tweet you got this week? It's my least favorite part of the
I feel like I don't even bring it up, the goalies. I don't start shit, Bridget. I just finish it, you know? But as far as starting stuff, the offense. So I think we can probably save ourselves a little bit of time. We all kind of agree the top two lines would be Pasternak, Zacha, Heinen, Marchand, Coyle, and DeBrusque, right? So the bottom two lines, guys, who's your scratch up front to begin, and how would you line up those bottom two lines?
All right, here, Bridget knows this because I predicted it pregame.
I was going to bring it up.
But I still feel this way after the game.
Really?
So pregame, I predicted that James Van Riemsdyk was going to have multiple points last night and win back his third line job. Now, he did not have any points, but I do think he earned game one spot as third line left wing. I thought Van Riemsdyk played in a game where very few Bruins did. I thought he played really well against Ottawa. And I thought that line of him, Geeky, and Frederick was the Bruins' best line. They created several good scoring chances, just couldn't bury them. But no one else has really clicked in that spot. So that was enough to set, like, that's been their best third line this year. Obviously, it had just been a long time since we saw it. But I'm gonna trust, at least for the first game, and then we can go from there, the veteran Van Riemsdyk to raise his game, to meet the ask, to be a fit on that line. By the way, facing one of his former teams, I'm putting him on the third line. Fourth line, I will go Lauko, Boqvist, Maroon.
Which leaves out Beecher.
Yeah, and Beecher got sent down. And, we'll, you know, I'm guessing he gets called back up before Saturday, but
just check in right after the podcast and see.
Yeah.
It'll probably go up right after.
He was at Providence Bruins practice on Wednesday. So that wasn't just a lot of people thought that's just a paper move where, oh, okay, you have to send him down because you want to reward Jason Megna, who's, you know, a 34-year-old who has had a very good season in Providence. You get him into the final game. It seems like it was at least a little bit more than just a paper transaction. And I do think Beecher has had a couple tough games recently, so he could very easily get back in. But for right now, he would be my game one scratch.
Yeah, I mean, I think Boqvist is a lock. I think Maroon, obviously you traded for him. He's going to be in your, on your fourth line to start game one. And Lauko has been playing well. I think I've liked his game. He's kind of like a mosquito. He's just all over, like he's all over whoever has the puck. He's yeah, there you go, Ryan. There he is, as Lauko has gotten your room. But yeah, he's been a pest in terms of not giving anyone space. That's what he does best. I thought he's had a good last stretch. And so I agree with you on that. I was making fun of Scott yesterday when JVR didn't have any points. He started talking to me about expected points, and he was blaming Geeky and everybody under the sun for the fact that Van Riemsdyk didn't have a point because they couldn't finish. But
well, he had four almost points, so I feel like that's the equivalent of two real points.
Did they keep track of expected points instead of expected goals?
I don't know.
It was like a bit of a step.
Not publicly. Yeah, not that I know of. Not anything I have access to.
Yeah, no, that's too advanced for even the advanced stats. But he didn't play bad, right? He provides a veteran presence in the bottom six, which is another pro. That's a big line with him, Geeky, and Frederick. It's an imposing line. It's a line that gets pucks to the net a lot. And if you have Van Riemsdyk doing his thing, taking away the goalie's eyes net front, you could see it being successful. As long as Van Riemsdyk is more of what we saw in the beginning of the season, or even the middle of the season, than the last month, might even be a little bit more than a month now, that he's seen time healthy scratched because for one reason or another, or even sometimes unhealthy scratch when he was sick. So he's going to look more like the other version of him that we saw earlier in the season.
So I like what you suggested, Scott. I think it's, look, I don't want Jacob Lauko on the third line. I just don't. I want him on the fourth line, if anything. And then Maroon, it's like he's played two games. So it's tough to put him on the third line with Geeky and Frederick, because they're sitting there saying, well, we haven't worked with this guy all year. Good guy in the room. And I know Frederick loves Maroon personally. Like, he looks up to him, but they haven't gained that on ice chemistry yet. So I think what you said about Van Riemsdyk is I agree with, right? I think there's an opportunity there for him to bounce back here. And then as far as the fourth line, yeah, I would scratch Beecher as of right now based on, I think Lauko, yeah, Bridget put it best. He's a pest. He's a mosquito. And I think that's useful this time of year, and he has speed to keep up with Toronto. What I will say is, if Lauko, my biggest gripe with Lauko is I'm just kidding.
Is that a joke because he eats grapes before the game, or did you accidentally just like?
Oh no, of course that was on purpose. I knew that would get you guys giggling. But my biggest gripe with Lauko is that he doesn't make a lot of great plays with the puck on a stick. And so, you know, if Lauko struggles to really do what he does best, he's certainly not making plays. So if he's not bringing the energy and the physicality, and the Bruins decide to go with Beecher, and Beecher's not really bringing much of anything either, a wild card option I wouldn't mind seeing on that fourth line is maybe Anthony Richard with Boqvist, because I think that Richard has the ability, skill wise, to make plays, to make those give and go passes in the D zone, break out into the neutral zone. I think he's good in the offensive zone, and so I could see a Boqvist Richard Maroon fourth line. I think it would look. I think it would probably take the Bruins a bit of convincing and poor play from other players to do that. I think that's unfortunate. I think I would kind of like to see that, but I just think that there's guys in front of them for one reason or the other.
Yeah. And, you know, let's remember, because with Anthony Richard, he played pretty well when he was up here. And I think we all kind of felt like when he got sent down, it wasn't so much that he had like earned a demotion or, you know, wasn't doing his job. It was, he was at 9 games played. If he got to 10, he would have needed to clear waivers if he got sent back down after that. the trade deadline was coming up. So I remember making this point at the time, but it was like, well, that seems like a roster flexibility thing, right? Like, okay, send Rashard down now while there's no consequences, and then see what our roster looks like after the deadline. Maybe he comes back, maybe he doesn't, but you don't have to worry about that waiver situation. Well, now that all goes out the window in the playoffs. Like, now cap's gone, like all that. So you don't have to worry about that. So he could definitely be back. It is an option for sure.
Yeah, he's probably someone people forgot about. Because he got sent down very end of February. So it's been a while since we've seen him on the ice. But also it coincided with Brazo coming up. And it was like, okay, we're gonna give Brazo a chance. We're gonna send Rashard down now. And it made sense roster-wise, like you mentioned, Scott, but also had to do with the fact that Brazo, when he did come in, started playing well and he earned his spot. And so that's really where we were. In terms of that, this just popped in my head and it's probably not a thing. How many games did Brazo play with the Bruins this season so far? I don't have it in front of me right now, but
I feel like it was around maybe 15 to 20. By the way, yeah, all my commentary in the forward lines, obviously same as you guys, this is going under the impression that he's not healthy to start.
Yeah. 19 games for Brazo.
19 games. So yeah, if Brazo hadn't played so well, maybe they do, I don't know, extend him. But like you mentioned, it's a tricky thing with the 10-game situation where they got to clear waivers after that. So that hurts guys who have come up. They get sent down quicker than maybe they would otherwise, because they don't want to deal with the waiver stuff. But it's good that you brought that up, Brian. I don't know how likely that is. or how like because we were talking too about Megna. I don't think he's really gonna be playing in the playoffs. It was more of a like a pat on the back for a good season in the AHL kind of situation. So I don't think that's gonna be happening. But
yeah, one other point I'll make that, you know, potentially works in Beecher's favor. Toronto's a very good faceoff team. Fourth in the NHL this season, 53.5%. And as we know, Bruins have not been great on faceoffs, 21st at 49.5%. Obviously, Beecher is good on faceoffs, so that, you know, you could definitely see a situation where the Bruins are like, all right, we need another faceoff guy in, someone who can win some draws, and Beecher gets back in that way. Obviously, that's always been part of his value. But other areas of his game need to be up to the standard that you need to stay in the lineup.
Yeah, and the most recent information Monty gave us about where he stands on putting Beecher in is that even though he was technically like on loan to Providence and Montgomery didn't really know the logistics of it, he said Beecher is still part of the options I'm working with for game one. So to him, it's really a Monty decision, right? Like, who does he want? Who does he want back? And yeah, he's gonna have to decide what he wants to value in terms of face off. And obviously, Beecher has other attributes. He's fast. But there's more. I guess you could call Lauko a more consistent option in the bottom three. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, he's just been doing it a little bit longer. I wish.
But his skill set is much more like small. Like it's much more like specific, right? Whereas Beecher's,
yeah,
being a center, being able to win faceoffs can be a big asset.
Lauko's attributes is energy, physicality, and like you said, Bridget, being a pest. I desperately need somebody to work with Lauko in the off season. Cause right now it's too late in the game to work on it right now. But in the off season, like, he has to learn to slow the game down. Like, in his mind, physically, he's too, like, I get anxiety watching him. He just doesn't think the game. And the puck's off and on his stick. It's like, dude,
that's
just
why he's like a mosquito.
You need to, like, which is great if you can control that though. Right. Like, the puck gets on his stick and I don't know. He thinks too fast. He needs to be more methodical and slow the game down when he can, because I think it takes away from his ability to make plays.
Well, he desperately needs to work on his shot, his finishing too, because like there's been times where he's been on that third line with Geeky and Frederick, and most of it actually works, and you're like, okay, like he's keeping up with them, he's doing some hard work, you can see this, and then a cycle leads to him being the one that has a scoring chance, and it's right in the goalie's chest or into the pads, and it's like, you know, again, fourth line, maybe you can get away with that, right? Like offense isn't the biggest thing. You can just be the energy, physical forechecker guy. But like, if you're ever going to be a third liner in the NHL on any consistent basis, you have to bury chances when you get them.